started down the narrow winding stairway. "It's blacker than hell in here."
"Be careful," Kate said. "The steps are uneven."
They were almost at the bottom when they heard excited voices and hurried footsteps coming up toward them. They were speaking in Italian. Then George heard another sound, guns being reloaded and cocked. 43.
"Go on ahead," George whispered to the two women.
"Don't leave us," Kimberly pleaded.
"I won't. You just go ahead a few steps.
Please.
You can trust me."
Kate took her sister's hand.
"Come on, Kim."
They started down the narrow spiral stairs again, just as hurried footsteps told them that the men they heard were coming up toward them. George saw the glow of a flashlight bouncing off the curving walls. He shrank back up the stairs until the two women were out of his sight.
"Hey!" a man shouted. "How did you get out?"
"We tried the door and it opened," Kate answered.
"I bolted that door. It was locked."
"It opened when we tried it,"
Kimberly said shakily.
"We were afraid, all alone up there with all the shooting."
"I locked that door." "Never mind," came the other man's voice. "It doesn't matter. You say I forgot to lock it? It doesn't matter. You two get in front of us. You're going to be our shields until we get out of here."
The other man chuckled.
"Not the bad-looking shields, eh?"
George saw the flashlight glow dwindle down the stairs and heard their footsteps going away from him. As silently as he could, he tiptoed down after them, always staying around the curve of the wall so that they could not see him. The women and the two gunmen reached the stone landing at the bottom of the spiral staircase.
"What do we do now? Those commandos are gonna be coming up here any minute."
"Let them come. We got these two redheads to protect us. We go down to the courtyard, get in a car, and get the hell out of here."
George saw them standing there, one with a flashlight, the other with a shotgun in his hands. He was about a dozen steps above them, hidden in shadow.
"Come on," said the one with the flashlight. "We're not waiting for those soldiers to find us."
No time left. George roared out a bellow that would freeze a buffalo herd and leaped at the guy with the shotgun. He hit him like a mammoth lineman blindsiding a quarterback. The man went down, the shotgun skittering across the stone floor. The one with the flashlight threw it at George and reached for the pistol in his shoulder holster as the two women clutched at each other and edged back toward the wall. George rolled to his feet as the other man yanked the automatic out of its holster. With a single big ham-sized paw, George grabbed the gunman's extended hand and squeezed hard. The man screeched with pain. George bent his arm back, and he sank to his knees. With his other fist, George smashed him in the jaw as hard as his massive weight allowed. The man's head spun almost completely around, and he went limp in George's steel grip. George spun to look down at the other one. He was sprawled on the stone floor, out cold or dead. It did not matter to him which.
"You didn't leave us,"
Kimberly said, almost breathless.
"Told you could trust me," said George as he bent down to pick up the shotgun.
"You didn't leave us,"
Kim repeated, her eyes riveted on the big Australian. Holding the shotgun in one huge hand, the pistol tucked into his waistband, George made another little bow to them.
"This way, ladies," he said.
"Thanks," said Kate.
Kimberly said nothing, but her eyes were sparkling.
"I mean it," Gaetano said. "Drop your weapons, all of you, or I'll kill her."
Dan knew that Gaetano and his thugs would shoot the assault team as soon as they had put their weapons down, the same way they had when they had abducted Jane in the first place. These guys are wearing body armor and helmets, he thought swiftly. But even if they don't get killed, that bastard will still be walking away with Jane. Before anyone could reply to Gaetano's ultimatum, Dan yanked off his goggles and stepped out of the shadows of the corridor to the doorway where Gaetano could see him clearly.
"Before you shoot her, you're going to have to shoot me, you son of a bitch."
"Dan, no,"
Jane said. But Dan walked slowly into the room, straight toward her. Gaetano's eyes were filled with fear, but his lips twisted into a nasty little smile.
"If you want to be shot, I will be happy to accommodate you," he said.
Dan said nothing. Just kept pacing into the big room, closing the distance between himself and Jane. His weariness was gone. His legs felt strong and sure. He noticed every detail of the candlelit scene. Malik staring at him with round eyes. The other gunmen shifting uneasily, knowing that if a firefight started, they would be quickly killed. Gaetano still smiling, moving his pistol from Jane's head to point squarely at Dan's own chest. 10 paces separated them. 9. 8. Jane grabbed at Gaetano's crotch and squeezed. He shrieked and doubled over. Dan dove into the two of them, knocking them onto the bed, and then over its side to the floor as the room erupted in gunfire. Dan grabbed Gaetano by the hair and pounded his head against the stone floor. Again! Again! He bashed Gaetano's bloody head against the stone until someone pried him off. Jane was sitting on the floor beside Gaetano's inert form, his pistol in her hand. The room was blazing with light. Gaetano's dead face looked surprised, the back of his head oozing a pool of blood. "Are you all right?" Dan and Jane asked simultaneously. Then they burst into exhausted, relieved, almost hysterical laughter, and fell into each other's arms. Gentle hands pulled them apart and helped them to their feet.
"That was a very brave thing you did," said the assault team leader, "but very foolish."
She had removed her helmet, as had all the other Yamagata commandos. Dan was surprised to see that she was a woman. "You mean I'm a hero after all?" he said, grinning crookedly. Then he saw that Malik was on a stretcher, his legs soaked with blood, a plasma IV already inserted into his forearm. All the gunmen were on the floor, dead. "It's finished," Malik muttered as Dan went over to him. "It's all over." Dan shook his head. "Nope. It's just beginning." 44. The room looked more like a conference center than a hospital suite. Malik had cranked his bed up to a half-sitting position, the best he could do while his legs were still in their casts. Jane and Kate Williams sat on comfortable leather chairs beside his bed. Dan, in white hospital pajamas, in a wheelchair between them. Nobuhiko's lean, intense face filled the phone screen set at the foot of the bed. The big TV screen on the far wall was still showing the devastation of New Orleans. Malik had muted the sound, but none of them could take their eyes from the scenes of the flooding, the wreckage, the rescue workers searching in boats for survivors, and bodies.
"They're blaming us for the disaster," Jane said. "The public is confusing this tidal wave with the greenhouse effect."
"We can thank your pirate television broadcasts for that," Malik said to Dan.
Dan gave him a sardonic grin. "I guess you'll have to explain the difference and admit the truth of what I've been saying."
"All those people killed."
Kate's voice sounded hollow, far away. "Multiply it by a million," said Dan, his grin evaporating. "All the coastal areas on Earth will look like that if we let the greenhouse cliff happen."
"How can we stop it?" Malik asked. "We tried, and look where it's brought us. We were merely arranging the world for the crooks to take it over."
Dan gave him an exaggerated frown. "Vasily, much as I hate to admit it, you had the right idea. Wrong implementation, but basically the right idea."
"What do you mean?" asked Jane.
"We've got to work together. The whole world has to work together, all of us. Government, industry, the corporations, the GEC, everybody on Earth. The greenhouse cliff is a global problem, and it can only be beaten by an all-out global effort."
"That's what I tried to do," said Malik.
"Not quite," Dan said. "You tried the old collectivist approach. Take control of everything and make all decisions at the top. It didn't work in the old Soviet Union, and it won't work now. It never works."
"That's not entirely true," Jane said.
"And rain makes applesauce. Look, all of you, we need to have all the corporations work together with the GEC and all the individual national governments, but not all locked into some grand master plan that doesn't allow deviations or creativity or individual initiative. Free men and women can beat the greenhouse and keep people like Gaetano from sinking their claws into everything."
"You believe so?" Malik asked.
"I know it," replied Dan fervently.
"Then what are you suggesting?" asked Jane.
"Run this battle against the greenhouse cliff the way a good general runs a campaign. Set out the goals that must be reached. reduce fossil fuel burning by so